I wrote it out in my notes. There was three things that really were highlighted at last week's Torah portion. And that was, gosh, I'd have to go back up to my notes to remember, but it was, you know, evaluating, do you love what you're working for? Because if you don't, then you don't have that, the testimony of it was as if time didn't go by because he loved her so much. So, you know, really just establishing that revelation of being able to evaluate that if it feels like, man, this is taking forever, or it's not joyful, or, you know, meaning slavery, meaning it's not a fun thing. His work wasn't necessary. It was payment. It wasn't like, yay, those things that we're called to should be as if no time has passed if we evaluate what we're working for. So that was really heavy on my heart. And then the other one was, oh my gosh, I'm having to go back up to my notes, you guys. The ladder encounter obviously is always a big one. I feel like that's always kind of a big, you know, vision a lot of people know about. And I really just felt like there was something about the actual Torah portions that they say he left, he was sent, and then he dwelled. And I feel like there's a blueprint in there or a mystery in that blueprint that can reveal to us that before you're sent, have an encounter, you know, or before you can send out, let me put it that way. Before you can do that, that the establishment is leave, you know, meaning leave this earth and encounter him. And so we really talked about how Jacob was a man of encounter after this Torah portion. And then the other thing was, you know, obviously that, I mean, and it was a big one that Jacob served out of that encounter, that the encounter changed him. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that going back to last week's Torah portion. I want to talk a little bit more about that, that this encounter changed Jacob foundationally, fundamentally. And then obviously we know that the ladder is Yeshua, which is the Torah, the instructions, and having access to Adonai, who really had revealed himself in a separated state. Our commentary basically was that Jacob versus Abraham really had walked messy, some major character flaws. And we begin to see some separation through the generations, just like we did with Adam and Eve. And then it went to murder the very next generation. We begin to see the catapult on the generations in a negative way and in a positive way. But what we see here in Dad and I's commentary is that Jacob really wasn't he was still chosen, but he wasn't walking the way chosen should walk. And so Adonai releases who he is to him by him having access through a ladder, versus with Abraham, Yahweh stood right next to him. And that's not to cause like, well, why is there separation? But it's a foreshadowing of, because of the separation, he still in his goodness gives us access to who he is by giving us the ladder in the first place, which we're coming to find out is his instructions are not a place to separate, but because of your already separated state, the instructions bring you to him. He is a holy God. And we know that the Torah is also representation of who Yeshua is. And so really we begin to see the beginning workings of the access point to Adonai given to Yaakov is how you would say it in Hebrew. And then from that access point, we see a man who was unaware. And that's what I mean. Abraham was aware and so was Isaac. Jacob apparently was unaware, and this made him aware. And then he moves from that place and chooses to serve out of love from that place. Now, that's what we addressed last Friday. Where I was getting tripped up was when Taylor read, there was something about the stone being moved from the water well that just gripped me that I couldn't move from, but I wasn't getting the revelation quick enough to release it. But yet it still moved me. And so I want to touch on that a little bit more. And I'm going to touch a little bit more on what I think I was tapping into about the wives matter or about the bride. Okay, so I want to see if I can explain. So there's one thing that's really hitting me about the well. And I guess all I wanted to do was just reiterate what happens when you encounter and how it transforms your life. Because when you think about who Jacob was up until this point, we have, you just have a character that, I don't even know if I can describe it, but I mean, aside from the obvious, I mean, obviously you've got deception, but you've got tenaciousness, leadership, boldness. You've got, and in some way, a negative, you know, just kind of this, maybe even abrasive, just anyways. You fast forward and he has this encounter and then he handles this well situation. Interesting. If you think about it, he begins to take on his father's characteristics. Remember when we learned about Isaac and how he was like a man of peace. And, you know, when somebody would say that that's mine and he would just move on. He wouldn't really defend. Well, we see here that Jacob really begins to serve in a way we haven't seen before, and walks with leadership, but like in a humbled state. So meaning we see Jacob really, even though he's the baby, kind of just take things by force, right? Hungry after the birthright, has strategy, you know, takes it on, but then he also falls into, you know, manipulation, working against, you know, doesn't trust, you know, right? We've got all that. And then you see him on this journey. I want us to remember that from the time that he had this encounter, they say that when he lands at that well, it's about a 500-mile journey, and he's alone. You know, I mean, he's running for his life. So he is, and I kind of talked about this on Friday, that, you know, probably even a source of grief of, I'm never going to be able to establish, you know, like family is the establishment of releasing the covenant. And he's on his way to try to figure out how to have a family and doesn't even have a map. You know, he's just got to find these people. And so this is a 500-mile journey, and it's not an easy one, and he's alone. So think about it. When he gets to the well, I mean, just take yourselves in this situation. Like, the storyline is the storyline, but think about it. You have a 500-mile journey. You're alone. I'm pretty sure the first thing you're going to want to do is, hey, can you guys roll the rock away? I need water. Jacob's not concerned with his need for water. And this is where we see the transformational life, because he basically walks in leadership. He is a shepherd. He does know how to take care of the sheep. And he's basically trying to figure out why these other shepherds are not taking care of their sheep. So he walks in boldness and is asking these shepherds, why are you just sitting around? Because he's aware now that there's only so much time in the day. And he doesn't understand why they're just sitting around. When they say we can't until we're all gathered, there's something that is powerful in that he makes the decision to roll the rock away. And so he does the work, but he's doing it in context to making sure that Rachel's flock is fed or watered. So what I mean by that is, there, remember how I kept saying in this chapter, we see reversals, right? We see Leah as the firstborn gets hers first when Jacob was the lastborn, right? Like, there's a reversal. So like Jacob, who's the lastborn, gets honored as first. And then this time it's the other way around, where you would think if the story was to play out the way it did with Jacob, then the lastborn would be the one that would come first, but it's not. Leah comes first, who actually is first. So it's like a reversal of what happened. It's almost like a Yahweh's grace of, can I start over? Meaning, one of the things I want us to understand is children are a blessing. And I'm saying this as far as this Torah portion. Children are a blessing, but a lot of times people think children are a blessing because they're blessed, when in reality, it's just a blessing, because Yahweh is saying, here's another chance of redemption. So anyways, going back, you've got another reversal. Jacob recognizes that his mother probably raised him in the story that she found her husband at a well. I can only imagine that that story was probably told. So here you have Jacob, who's at a well, and now you can understand his weeping or his crying and his emotion publicly for the goodness of God, because he is doesn't know that he's going to be able to even receive such a blessing. And he was raised under his mom, who had this crazy story, right? So he's at a well again, which is another foreshadowing of many wells and wives, which is what I'm trying to get at in this releasing. There's something about the living water and the bride. Okay, so staying on track, you have another reversal here. Rebecca is basically tested by Eliezer that she would feed his flock. Jacob shows up on the scene, and to reverse, in my mind, I guess, his character flaws or doing the work, Yahweh reverses it, and Rachel puts the requirement, if Jacob can feed my flock. I hope that this makes sense. Basically, so again, we have another reversal, and I don't necessarily know what this means, but I'm just pointing that there's something else going on here besides just a story. So you have Eliezer, who is saying the right one is going to water our flock. And then in Jacob's storyline, it gets reversed. And Rachel, basically, not that she says it to Yahweh, but basically Jacob is required of Yahweh to feed her flock. And so again, there's these flips that are happening in Yahweh's redemption story. So I thought that that was super powerful. The other thing that I thought was powerful is just his ability to serve. He just journeyed 500 miles, and what he cares about is the sheep. And then he cares about Rachel's sheep. So, and does the work to put the stone away in order for the flock to be watered. And then you fast forward, then he basically decides to stay at Laban's, you know, house for a month, and then is okay. I mean, he doesn't argue when he says he's only supposed to have to work for a dowry for a week, but he tells him seven. I mean, he multiplies it from 7 days to 7 years. And Jacob is okay with that. I mean, you don't see him lash out. You don't see him. I mean, think about it. I mean, if he's a liar, or if he lied or manipulates or is deceitful, don't you think that he would have been the one to trick? Or, hey, I mean, he could have taken Rebecca and manipulated the whole thing and done. I mean, that was a pretty crazy, drastic storyline to put hair on the back of his neck. This is a changed man after this encounter, because if I was characterized by deception, and I find out I got to work for 7 years, why wouldn't I just deceive again if I was not transformed? And he doesn't. Then he gets deceived, and he takes it like a man, and he works another 7 years. So I think that there's more in that. But I wanted to just kind of point that out. The other thing that I was getting tripped up, and I think that that's what I was talking about maybe when I was feeling like there's something about the wife, because it felt like, I don't know. It felt like there was something about the first wife, But I really couldn't put my finger on it until the end when I realized it was because he chose to do the work for Rachel, who ultimately mothers the Gentiles. And that is our ancestry. But that Yahweh was faithful to the covenant of one wife and where Judah came from. And so you can see the beginning workings of the two houses coming together in the redemption story based on this, based on this, the beginning of this story, basically that he will redeem even a story that's not that great. I mean, it's founded on deception. It's founded on two wives, which is anti Yahweh. And yet he still says, I don't know. There was something about that, but I can't put my finger on where I was going with the whole like first wife. Cause I was thinking of what I was thinking of was first Adam. And then Yeshua is the youngest. And the older will serve the younger. And then in my mind or in my heart, what I was thinking is that there's something about the reversal where the first bride will serve. I mean, the younger will serve the older. And so essentially Rachel serving Leah to some extent because she's second, but she's loved. And I don't know. I feel like there's something in that that has to do with the houses. And again, I don't have the fullness of it, but it has to do with the houses in the sense of the Gentiles serving, you know, or honoring the seed of the Messiah. I don't know. But then that doesn't really make sense because we have Eve. So we've got the first woman and then the bride is the second. And so anyways, I don't know what all that means, but that's kind of what I was like trying to figure out. And I don't think I went anywhere with it until the end when I realized the difference between Rachel and Leah and where we came from. And so there's that. The other thing I wanted to point out was that there's something about the well and Jacob rolling the rock away. And I'm probably going to need to study a little bit more before I release on it, but there's something to there's something about the stone being rolled away and about the flocks having to be gathered. So when the shepherds were saying we can't water the flock until they're gathered, and then Jacob comes in and basically manhandles it and rolls the rock away so that they can be watered, I feel like it's a picture of, I'm not sure exactly how to say it, but like this picture, remember when I said Revelations, I feel like is in here, but there's something about this concept of, well, there's nothing we can do about it until we all get here. We just have to wait. Like we just have to waste time, right? We have to wait till all the shepherds with their flocks come together to be gathered before we can water. So we're just going to sit here. And Jacob basically comes in and rolls the rock away and basically says, we don't have very much time. Start drinking. And there's something about the living water and the bride that is found in those moments or in the moment. And so there's something in that because, and the reason why I say that is because the stone on that well is not the same stone as just a rock. It's actually not used very much in the Hebrew. And every time it is used, it has to do with either something prophetic or it has to do with the law. Like the tablets that God writes on is the same stone that's used in that well covering. So there's something about that. And meaning it's not just a rock. It's not just a stone. And the other thing is anytime Yahweh adds Aleph Tav in the scriptures in the Hebrew, it's a signature from Yahweh. There's really not an interpretation for it. But if you write out the Hebrew, there are these moments in scripture where he just adds in Aleph Tav, Aleph Tav, Aleph Tav, Aleph Tav. And it's basically beginning and end. It's Yahweh. It's Yahweh. And it symbolizes his signature. It's basically a pointer. Pay attention. And there are many Aleph Tavs in this Torah portion, specifically where the well happens. And in fact, like in one scripture, I think there's like three Aleph Tavs where the well story happens. And so, and it's an interesting story to begin with. I mean, here he is on a 500 mile journey. He still has to go find his wife. There's a lot more to the story that comes after. Why this watering flock story, right? I feel like there's something symbolic in there. And Jacob, as the father of our faith, who will father, the 12 sons, is the one who decides to roll it away and basically gives the living water. And so, I think that there's something to pay attention to. And I think that there's something in that. And I feel like as Taylor read, I had kind of missed it all week long. And when she read it, it just dropped in my spirit. I'm still trying to unravel the mystery, but there's a lot. And I know every single Torah portion, I say, okay, the gospel's in this one. But then I'm like, okay, no, literally the gospel is in this one. I mean, the latter was introduced. I mean, that is Yeshua. I mean, that is the gospel. I mean, every single time I feel like this is what Paul was talking about when he says that this is the fullness of the gospel. And especially because Yahweh reiterates the covenant blessing again. And he talks about three things: land, seed, and nations. And so he just keeps reiterating his promise. And then, like Dad said, it's always through the foundation of family. And so, anyways, I wanted to at least kind of touch on that and reiterate that from last Friday to see if I couldn't close any kind of gaps that I may have left open.